Well, I got here just in time. I see it's 3:30. This is the April 13th Finance and Audit Committee of Des Moines Water Works. We have myself, Sue Huppert. The other board members I'm missing.
I don't believe so.
Well, item one is the 2022 through 2026 5-year capital improvement plan. I will let Ted take it away.
Thank you, Joel. Each year since 2015, Des Moines Water Works has created a multi-year capital improvement plan to help guide our planning and capital spending over the next 5 years. Initially, those were 3-year plans. More recently, they've been 5-year CIPs. Today, Mike McKernan and Amy Kaler are going to present the 2022 through 2026 CIP. And a couple of things of note that I'll share before we let them get into the details. One is that I think you'll see that the total spending identified in this year's 5-year CIP is less than the last couple of capital improvement plans, 5-year CIPs. Not because the needs are any less or we've eliminated projects, but we've reprioritized and moved some of the projects that we don't anticipate completing outside the 5-year window. So trying to be more realistic and more practical in terms of the projects that are included in the 5-year CIP. You'll also see that we are moving in the direction of capacity expansion within the CIP, which Mike will talk more about, specifically related to well field enhancements, expansion at Sayreville and ASR in this 5-year period, in response to the update of our long range plan that we heard at a recent board committee meeting. So with that as an intro and a couple of highlights, I'll turn it over to Mike and Amy for the presentation.
Thank you, Ted. Yeah, today's topic or this afternoon's topic will be the next phase of the 5-year CIP. Amy and I will team up here. A little picture of where we're headed today. We want to cover the background again. We've been doing this 5 or 6 years now, but we want to make sure the board's well aware of when we started doing this and why. And then we'll get into the themes of this CIP. I mean, Ted's tipped you off very well that you're going to see some lower numbers, but it's not about less need. It's about maybe more focus. And as we look at the next 5-year window. And then, of course, Amy will handle that last bullet where we talk about financial issues as it relates to regionalization at the same time. So again, we first started doing this in 2015, so this is probably our 6th crack at this, maybe 7. I did the math differently there, I'd probably get a different answer. Originally a 3-year effort, now we're focusing on 5-year windows, and some of the big breadcrumbs here today are in this window of CIP, we're going to talk to you about near $260 million in viable spending. 165 of that is waterworks spending, and $92 million of support from others, meaning wholesale metro area water users. Again, the background here and some history here at Des Moines Water Works. There's clearly a documented effort by staff over the years to look beyond 1 year, investigate and study things that would impact the utility looking forward. And so you can see a kind of a laundry list of things that have just been done since 1986. I'll certainly do like I've done the last 2 years and call your attention to the effort of 2017 when Des Moines Water Works teamed with CH2M and HDR. Nathan Casey helped navigate and lead an effort here to create this very important document. It serves as a guidepost for us moving forward. It's also just simply a technical resource for current staff and even the staff that will replace many of us. There's just great information in this long-range plan about our facilities and about a vision for the future. Again, that plan got us out till 2040 roughly, and it identified over $625 million in spending. And again, that report was focused on source, treatment, transmission, and distribution. So again, an important document for all of us to be aware of. Again, key to that document, how it was prepared, clearly built on population and some water demand, again, out till 2040. We had great inputs from our regional colleagues to help get the data to build the report. Significant amount of hydraulic modeling. I mentioned the $625 million plus in projects that were identified. The other key thing that it does, because it's looking at source and treatment and transmission, you know, these things that add capacity were identified and they were given time slots. And so if you look at some of the italicized stuff in the red bubble there, the plan called out for two ASRs to be in place by 2020. That has not happened yet. It called for a 10 MGD expansion at Sailorville to be in place by 2024, a subsequent expansion at McMullen by 2030, and then an even larger one 5 years later. And those dates are going to be challenged here in just a few slides, but this is what the initial report provided. And this report has really been the backbone for our most recent CIPs, but we've done a few things in quarter one here that I'll get to in just a minute that, again, help influence what we've tried to put in this five-year window. Just back to those expansion things, this is a slide that shows the ASR expansions that were to be done in time. So by the year 2020, if you look vertically there, you see two red circles. Those were at the time of the report, we envisioned a couple ASRs being integrated into the broader system. Again, that's yet to happen. It also talked about this treatment plant expansion by this table shows it's kind of broken down into 5 year windows, but that treatment plant expansion was to be done by 2024. And this table calls it out being done by 2025, which is again, essentially the same statement. And here's the new information. As a board, we've done some things in quarter one that you've heard about, but I have to remind you because it's had an influence here. We acquired HDR. We reached out to some of the same individuals that were key contributors on the original plan. Mr. Mark Dubin was hired to, you know, knock the dust off the plan. And that plan had operational data up through 2014 and 2015. And so we asked Mark to take 5-6 more years of operational data in regard to average day and peak day and do two things with that. One was to see if the average day and peak day projections that were in the original report, see if those were still kind of holding true, you know, 4 years later. And the other thing that we asked him to do was there are some, in our view, there's some new water demands in the metro region data center like water demands that were not known at the time of the report. So we added some additional demand into the backdrop of that report and asked Mark to then answer the final question here of, could any of the key projects that were originally identified in that long range plan, could they be delayed? Are we under a time crunch or not? And the numbers and the analysis completed by, again, Mark Dubin at HDR says that those plans should not be delayed. And if anything, there might be some support for them being accelerated, and maybe even the order of them should be considered by Waterworks staff. And so as we've prepared this five-year CIP, we have clearly used this input from Mr. Dubin as kind of a additional piece of information, and it's had an impact. Before we dive real deep into this, I want to just explain and make sure everyone's aware that this is, you know, while there's a lot of engineering related projects that get discussed when we build the CIP, this is truly a utility-wide endeavor. You know, it's not just engineering that spends the capital dollars. Other departments are involved: distribution, production, IT, customer service. And so think about our laboratory and instruments and anything of significant expense that we might need to use capital dollars to acquire. Again, inside our own treatment plants, maybe there's pumps that need to be replaced, or a motor or a sensor, or some, again, not small dollar things, but things that are large enough to be considered a capital need. Again, trying to account for some of those items as well. We're conducting this meeting today with the benefit of computers and cameras, microphones, wide area networks, all kinds of technology allows us to meet like this. But quite frankly, even to allow our operation to operate every day requires this technical infrastructure and backbone and the systems that run on it. And then we can get below ground. Distribution has tools and equipment and apparatus that they need to acquire over time. That again is a capital expenditure. And back to being above ground, I think we've got to have at least 100 plus vehicles a fleet to make our utility mobile. We are a mobile crew. We're a mobile team, and reinvestment in things as simple as trucks and crew vans and backhoes are all part of this big picture. So, you know, the next thing I want you to visualize here is that, you know, this long range plan gets us out to 2040, and I can show you a list of probably 200 projects. And what we try to do is we try and leave these projects on the list, and then we simply try and slot those projects into the window with which we're looking at. So there are certainly some projects that we might look at now and say, well, we'll probably never do that. But we try not to cross projects off. We just simply say, well, we're going to defer that. And then there's other projects where we have to make decisions about what's more important. And again, we might defer a project based upon some prioritization and some reality that comes into play when we talk about, you know, available funding. Even when we do talk about significant things like bonding or issuing purchase capacity. So again, just some envision a list of projects, and then we're just trying to slot them into the right years, and we try and adjust the cost again to deal with inflationary items. We might have an estimate built in 2019, but if we want to put that project in 2024, then those numbers will adjust. So that's kind of the chess match that a number of folks in engineering and production and finance have been playing with over the last probably 6 weeks here as we've developed this. Again, I'm going to repeat a few things, but this window comes up with $165 million of waterworks spending. The key themes here are, again, Ted tipped us off early, probably just more discretion, a little more focus. Another theme here is water quality. Article in the press today about the lack of glamour associated with the Raccoon River is in the news today. Most recently in Des Moines Water Works operating challenge, we've seen the last 2 years with the Des Moines River pretty much on the disabled list from a perspective of cyanotoxins. So we've looked at this water quality element of the CIP, and we've continued to make some strong statements here, and I'll focus on what's in red there first. You know, I mentioned the cyanotoxin events the last 2 years. We've come to the board in the last month with an amendment to an agreement with USGS to really broaden the exploratory region to the north along the Des Moines River so that we can potentially set the table for larger alluvial well field and potential plant expansions at Sailorville. So again, that USGS amendment also kind of plays into some broader thinking. And again, a larger alluvial well field provides benefits for a number of water quality challenges: nitrate, ammonia, cyanobacteria, the toxins, even some disinfection byproduct related issues. So there's an example where we will put focus on an alluvial well field, and it allows us to comfortably defer and put off nitrate removal treatment or a wetland in the park, because this alluvial well field is kind of, it has multiple benefits, and it's a more efficient deployment of our reinvestment dollar. So that's kind of the message on water quality. Next comes ASR capacity, rather. The report from HDR is encouraging us to accelerate, and what we've put in this five-year window is continue to embrace ASR. We have a call for an ASR number, Des Moines number 4, to be a part of this CIP. Outside of this plan, Waukee is actively proceeding with designing, bidding, and constructing an ASR of their own. So it's nice to have some participation on the outskirts of the system with aquifer storage and recovery. This is a fine example of something they're doing that will provide benefit to us. We've kept the CIP, or the Sailorville plant expansion, in this CIP. And if you will recall, the original plan said that should be done by 2024. It will be a challenge for us to fit this into a five-year window. That's what we've kind of presented in the window, is that we will get all of this done: source water, treatment expansion, and some transmission projects associated with that. Carefully being balanced here, and this is where Ted has been able to provide excellent guidance on how aggressive we get with potential expansion projects that are identified here. We want to, as we're getting to the later stages of regionalization discussions, and we're also talking about an expansion, we want to make sure we don't do something here that would land us with some stranded assets there. So we've been very careful about that. So we've tried to take a very measured approach, and we intend to do the 10 MGD expansion at Sailorville as part of this CIP. I don't want to forget the distribution system. There's clearly this focus about water quality and expansion, but that effort in 17, there's key elements in there that if we want to get our main break rate down to a closer to some national standards, we need to invest more to get our main break rate per 100 miles at a more acceptable level. So we've left the vigilance in the CIP that allows us to do that. There's a lot of numbers here. This is my tip to just, I know you guys get a lot of information to read, but the memo that's provided has two very good attachments. There's kind of a condensed version of the CIP, which is what you're looking at here. And the upper half of this table, it shows the capital needs that are in the plan for, again, customer service, IT, distribution, and production. And you can see those numbers probably average close to $6 million a year and $30 million for the full window. The middle section is where we start talking about the engineering-related projects that would be done for the utility, significantly larger numbers, but you can see how they're broken down: capacity, transmission, quality, WMR, core network projects, Des Moines Water Works capital, and work for others. And again, some of the broad numbers we shared at the very beginning, you know, close to $260 million in total spending, 165 of which is ours, and more than 90 from colleagues. Also in the memo is it's not compressed. It's a more detailed look at every single project that is in the CIP. It's on the probably legal or 11 by 17 paper. It gives you a better idea of all the all the granular parts of this. If you have questions about those, we can round up answers. This is my final slide, and I like to have a little fun with my favorite sports writer from my younger years. But if you look at the highlighted numbers here, and again, this is just a summary of some recent CIP efforts where we look at waterworks spending, and you'll see this. We've been in the above 220 the last two times, and now we come to you with something closer to 165. And I think Maury would say that, you know, this CIP is leaner for certain, but it contains the key all-stars that were in previous plans. And again, I'm referring to the Sailorville expansion, the Des Moines River alluvium, the ASR number 4, and our vigilance toward WMR. If we get, you know, a year down the road or 2 years down the road, and we feel like some of the focus and some of the trimming that we did to create this CIP has been too much, you know, we can certainly bring projects back into the window. Like I said before, we're not eliminating them. They're there. We can slide them in and out as we need to. I will comment just briefly on the delta here. I think there's probably a little over 50 million in difference between the last CIP you saw and the one that's being presented today. There's two projects that account for more than half of that difference. There was some transmission projects in the previous CIP that after closer scrutiny, we felt like we could pull out without impacting the ability of that Sailorville expansion to still function properly. So we feel good about that choice and that decision. There was also a project approaching 8 million for Crystal Lake that's not in this CIP. Again, we felt like if we put the focus on these four key projects and larger efforts, we will have plenty to do and plenty of great work to do. So with that, I am going to lateral to Amy Kaler.
Thank you, Mike. You know, Mike just got done really sharing that they have focused some of their projects on projects that give us more of a bigger bang for our buck, I guess. And so some of the water quality projects that have been included in past plans have dropped out and perhaps indefinitely. And my hat's off really to the team to really focus on creative ideas that do give us the biggest bang for our buck, because as the numbers person who is responsible for making sure that we have the funding for this plan, it's always easier if those funding needs aren't quite as great. This is the CIP of 165 million, as Mike has mentioned several times, is a little less challenging than in prior years, frankly, in terms of funding. And I'll talk about what our options are. But to add to the challenges is the status of regionalization. And, you know, that's still at a state. We've been working hard for a good part of a year to put us in a good place. And I certainly think we know more than we did at this time last year. But there are still some unanswered questions in terms of, will regionalization take place? What will it look like? When would it take place? And so all of those considerations impact the funding picture. And that's what's going to provide the challenge on the funding. And so we just need to, as we pull these levers of funding, really keep in mind the considerations of regionalization. And so that's what we will do for sure. So let's talk about how to lift this $165 million plan off the ground. We really have three broad categories for funding as I see it. Water revenue is the first lever. And when we do a cost of service, we are identifying capital costs, not just operational costs related to the cost of producing water, but we're also assigning capital costs. And so as part of our rates, a capital component is in the rates that we are collecting so that we can fund a capital program. And frankly, rates are a really important part of any CIP funding plan. Over the next 5 years, we anticipate that our rates will provide about $120 million for capital improvements. And we have typically funded ordinary capital projects as we collect the rates, and the industry calls this pay as you go. And so we have used pay as you go in our history for most of our recurring and ordinary, I would call it, capital projects. And, you know, things that fall into this category that make rate funding a really good solution are main replacements, ordinary main replacements, meters and meter reading, buildings, fleet. Those are some examples, you know, things that project costs that we're incurring every year fairly consistently. Those make really good candidates to be funded through rate revenue. But paying for extraordinary capital needs through rate revenue, like water treatment plant expansions, alluvial well fields, those aren't aligned as well for water revenue because they come and go. And if we try to fund extraordinary projects, capital projects, through rate revenue, we would experience rate volatility for our customers. And we all know customers don't like rates going up and down, rate volatility. And so when we have these extraordinary capital projects that would qualify, the treatment plant expansion for one, then we typically look for other solutions. So the next lever that we could pull for the parts of the CIP is purchase capacity. For the most recent past expansion projects, we have chosen to finance those through purchase capacity. We constructed McMullen Water Treatment Plant through purchase capacity and also Sailorville. We sold, you know, purchase capacity to wholesale customers. And frankly, I think it's a pretty creative solution or alternative to taking on debt, especially when the capacity that's being built isn't for our retail customers. You know, the expansions that we're talking about, we have some growth in the Des Moines area and our direct retail customers, but we all understand, of course, that most of the growth is being incurred in the suburbs. And so purchase capacity then, I think, becomes a really viable solution for any project that adds additional capacity to our system. If regionalization hasn't or won't occur, I think purchase capacity should be an option that we explore for the $70 million expansion of the Sailorville Water Treatment Plant. And I do think that there would be interest in purchasing additional capacity from our wholesale customers. The question in my mind, that Sailorville Water Treatment Plant expansion is 10 MGD. When I look at our wholesale customers, the question in my mind is there enough demand out there for 10 MGD for additional capacity? I think that there is definitely some interest in additional capacity. It remains to be seen whether we can get up to 10 MGD. We had four communities, for example, who exceeded their purchase capacity this year, or excuse me, in 2020, when really the peaks weren't that high in 2020. We didn't see a lot of peaking. But four of our wholesale communities still exceeded their purchase capacity. So those are the ones who are going to be really interested, I believe, in purchasing more. And then on any given year, we have another 2 to 3 communities who not every year, but occasionally exceed. And so those would also be good candidates to purchase additional capacity. One really strong advantage that I see to purchase capacity, and this is really important, is that it represents a commitment by the buyer, by that community, to continue being served by Des Moines Water Works. It really formalizes our partnership and our relationship. And I think in a world where we're making capital investment decisions amidst uncertainty of who's going to grow off of our system and who is going to go off on their own, I think getting that commitment makes selling purchase capacity really attractive. And then we also have a mechanism in our regionalization work that we've done thus far. We have a mechanism that we've developed to fold purchase capacity owners into the regional construct or model. And so there's a way to deal with that. So if we, you know, expanded Sailorville, sold purchase capacity, and later regionalized, there's a path forward to make all of that come together in a way that makes sense. So I think that is, purchase capacity, frankly, may adapt better to regionalization than the next lever, which is debt. So a traditional lever, of course, is issuing debt, and there are a couple paths to debt, both revenue bonds and the state revolving fund loan program, which we call SRF. To issue bonds on the most favorable borrowing terms, it's really important to be able to tell a good story and help potential bondholders or buyers of the bond to understand what that project is. And I think that treatment expansions in the well field along the Des Moines River are good stories, and those would be good candidates for both revenue bonds and, in my view, SRF. I think the timing and uncertainty of regionalization complicates issuing revenue bonds specifically. It doesn't make it impossible, certainly, but it does complicate it because there are timing issues. When we issue bonds, we are pledging all of our assets as collateral against those bonds, not just the asset that's being constructed. And so as those assets are pledged, we kind of tie them up while the bonds are outstanding. And we've talked a little bit about that as a board. And so in considering whether or not we're going to issue bonds to pay for any of our CIP, we just need to be aware of asset transfer considerations related to regionalization. We have additional debt capacity of about $110 million. So that's a good chunk of change. Although just as there are good reasons not to max out our personal credit cards, there are good reasons to not max out our debt capacity because it really makes that an option that goes away and we wouldn't be able to use it in the future. So I'm not advocating that we max out. Another debt option that we've used in the past is SRF funding or an SRF loan. We took out an SRF loan in 2003 and it paid for feeder main up to Polk City. And SRF generally has a favorable rate, frankly, compared to bond revenue bonds, the debt covenants are a little less restrictive. But the downside to SRF is that there are also pretty rigid federal compliance requirements. So some of those examples are environmental review, making sure that we comply with Davis-Bacon wage requirements. There's a requirement for the use of American steel and iron and so on. And so SRF can be administratively burdensome. Before we want to start any sizable project, we'd want to make sure we have all of those boxes checked and that there would be no surprises. Because as you can imagine, let's just take the Sailorville expansion. That's a $70 million project. SRF is on a reimbursement basis. So it's not like you get the money up front. You're incurring the expense. You're submitting the invoice for payment, and then the loan is, payments are made, and then you can pay the contractors. Well, you don't want any administrative snafus to prevent getting any sort of a payment so that the project can go on. So that's something that we just need to be very careful of if we want to use SRF. The upside to SRF is that it can offer more flexible solutions in terms of regionalization. We have had preliminary discussions with the Iowa Finance Authority, who oversees the SRF program in Iowa. And based on those discussions, we think SRF could help transition to regionalization, especially as it relates to asset transfer. So it could refinance the loan to be basically the regions. And they seem to be willing to really customize a solution there and work with us on that. So that is positive in terms of SRF. So I think just to wrap all of this up, what Mike and I want you to walk away from this remembering is the CIP, we're projecting, we're planning for $165 million over the next 5 years. As Mike spoke about, timing for those high priority projects should not be relaxed. We have already pushed them down a little bit, and we really can afford to do that no longer. The projected rate revenue that we would get from our rate stops just short of providing sufficient funding. It provides a greater percentage than it has in the past, but it stops short. And we do have funding options beyond rate revenue. I really couldn't tell you today what I think the best option is, because I think it depends on the outcome of those regionalization discussions, what the outcomes are, when regionalization could occur, and so forth. And then I think we need to sit down and really look at each of those options in the context of the challenges and benefits, frankly, of regionalization. So I think with that, Mike and I would like to open it up to questions and comments and see what's on your mind.
Mike and Amy, thanks for a great report. A lot of really helpful information here. Amy, can you tell me about, I guess I'd say the runway in terms of timing with some of these decisions as the regionalization talks continue? Hard to know exactly how long those will take before we have some kind of conclusion or direction. Do we have enough time before we need to start making decisions regarding debt? Are we going to reach kind of a fulcrum, a pinch point at some point where we're, need to make a decision, but maybe can't? What's kind of our runway here?
Yeah, I think first of all, we need to continue focusing on bringing those regionalization discussions to closure. And I know we're working very hard to do that. I think we could reach a pinch point, as you very eloquently said. And I think if we do and regionalization hasn't occurred, then our financing solution is one that can be flexible if regionalization later occurs. So a couple there that I mentioned would be purchase capacity. You know, we could try to sell purchase capacity, or we could look at SRF, I think, pretty closely as well. I think if we don't have any answers on regionalization, I would be a little hesitant to issue revenue bonds, just because we haven't had closure on the asset transfer discussion.
Mike, I was glad to see you pulled out the old Maury White photo. Joel, don't be too impressed. He used that about 4 or 5 years ago in a previous presentation. But no, that was great. And Amy, I think this is a great kind of placeholder for where we are on the regional discussions. This is why we're trying to decide how would we want the assets to transfer and what would we do about remaining debt. So I hope everybody on the board gets a copy of this and has a chance, you know, to ask questions if they have any.
Joel, I would also like to point out that I think that Mike and Kyle and their team have done a really nice job of trying to identify a path that at least in the near term is appropriate for both regional or not regional. In other words, the projects that we're going to be doing this year and in the first year of this five-year CIP are beneficial regardless of which path we go. We're certainly working on regionalization and hope we bring that to conclusion in a positive way, but we won't have wasted effort or money. It's also with the focus at Sailorville, we have some flexibility there too as we work on the well field and siting wells. We're moving in the direction of the 10 MGD expansion. That is what's in the five-year CIP, but we could fairly easily pivot that to a 25 MGD expansion if that's what we decide is the most appropriate thing based on the outcomes of our regionalization discussion. So I think this puts us on a positive path regardless, but we really need to bring those discussions to conclusion so we can plan effectively and make those kind of decisions.
I have a more, I guess, global question, maybe. We've been shown a few reports that reference this, the 2017 study that told us, you know, we'll want to have X facility completed by Y year and so forth. And in several instances, we've already, you know, kind of failed to meet those deadlines or not on track to do that. How did we get behind in that regard? Were those expansions that just, you know, at the time they were discussed in 2017 weren't even going to be possible by those deadlines? Did we already pass that point, or were there decisions we made along the way for various reasons? So one, how did we get behind in that regard? And what are we doing? Is this plan, is this CIP, is this put us in a position to catch up? Is this enough?
Great questions, Joel. And I think a couple of, there are actually three or four questions there. So let me try to start.
Try your best. I know I gave you a lot.
Yeah, I don't think that when the long range plan was initially completed that it was unrealistic or unreasonable for us to meet the goals. So that's not the problem. Okay. The challenge that we have had is that there has been consideration by other communities to build their own facilities. And so Des Moines Water Works has been somewhat reluctant to invest $70 or $100 million in expanding a plant that's capacity would not be needed by the time it was completed. And so we have been working very hard with our regional partners to understand what direction regionalization is going to go and who is going to build capacity. I think, Joel, it really highlights the critical importance of planning together as a region and working cooperatively. Even if we don't regionalize, we still have to plan effectively. We have to know what they're going to do, because we don't want to make that kind of an investment and then have somebody else build a plant across the street, if you will. So I think that's been the biggest challenge for us, is just reluctance to make that kind of an investment when others were considering doing the same. I think that there has also been some sense that demand patterns may have changed a little bit. It's been a decade since we had that kind of a demand pattern that saw extreme peaks. And so there was some sense, I think, that, well, maybe we don't need to plan for quite as high of a peak. I will tell you, I don't necessarily subscribe to that line of thinking. I think that the conditions just haven't been right. That's the very conservative engineer in me coming out. But that's exactly why we asked HDR to take a look at it for us again. And we've gotten some feedback that we need to not only not delay, but maybe even accelerate the plan. Your last question about whether this plan will catch us up. If we implement a 5M or a 10 MG expansion over the next 5 years, that will not catch us up. I think that what it will do is provide the appropriate amount of capacity if somebody else chooses to build their own facility. And so we're still on this path of not creating duplicate or stranded assets. If regionalization comes to pass and we all decide to work together, I think the plan that Mike and his team have put together will allow us to pivot in a way that we can use what we have learned from USGS and the well fields along the Des Moines to build the capacity that we need that could catch us up. But to be clear, to catch up with the updated long range plan, we would need to be building a larger expansion in the next 5 years than 10 MGD.
Thank you, that is a good explanation, I appreciate it. One more question regarding water main replacement and the need to accelerate that. So I'm looking at 2022, would that be, would 2022 be the first year of that kind of accelerated emphasis, or is that already, have we been doing that more recently? Where do we stand with that? What does that look like in the community? Is that a lot more, will that be pretty visible in the community?
I think it would be visible, Joel, and has been visible. We have in the last 2 or 3 years, and Mike, I'm going to ask you to back me up here a little bit, but in the last 2 or 3 years, we've been investing $5, $6, $7 million a year instead of, you know, $2, $3, $4 million, which is what we would have invested in years prior to that. And a lot of that, frankly, has been going on to city projects where they're repaving the street. And so we're taking advantage of that opportunity to get in at the same time. So Mike, what would you add to that in terms of historic investment versus future investment?
Yeah, we've definitely changed our behavior in regard to that reinvestment. Are we at the targets that were identified in that plan? Probably not. We're again, at budget time, we're trying to, you know, narrow this thing down. And so we've clearly turned it up, but have we completely met that goal? No.
Thank you. And Mike, I'll say, I did like the reference to the Big Peach. When you're a cub reporter at the Register and one of your jobs is answering the phones, one of the questions you get most often is, why don't you bring back the Big Peach? So people are still mad, or at least when I was there, we're still mad that the Big Peach is gone. So,
well, so long as I'm here, you'll see the Big Peach at least once a year.
Good. Long live the Big Peach.
Classic.
Any other questions or comments on this item? Hearing none, I think we can move to the next item, which is CEO comments.
Two comments for me, Joel, today. I fear that I have been remiss in not advising the board that Laura Sarcone has been selected as our new Director of Customer Service and Marketing. So congratulations to Laura. Laura, well-deserved, congratulations.
Congrats, Laura. Well deserved.
Thank you so much.
Glad to hear it.
And second, you may already be aware that today the Raccoon River was identified as one of the most 10 most endangered rivers in the nation by American Rivers, which is a nonprofit organization that publishes a list of endangered rivers on an annual basis. The list is based on nominations rather than some sort of criteria system, but individuals and groups are able to nominate rivers, and then they go through all the nominations and make the selection. And clearly the Raccoon River, with its impairments based on nutrients and bacteria over the years, and the fact that it's a drinking water source for 500,000 people, is definitely a candidate for that list, somewhat of a dubious distinction at best. That has created a lot of media interest, a number of media inquiries today for us here at Des Moines Waterworks. Jennifer Terry and Melissa Walker have done a great job of providing me with talking points, data, and information that I needed to respond to those, but I'm guessing that will be a topic of conversation for some period of time here on an ongoing basis. We'll see what, if anything, we can make out of that from a policy and PR perspective. So Joel, that's it for me.
All right, thank you. And item three is public comments. Have any members of the public who'd like to speak? Hearing none, that's all we had. We will adjourn.
Very good. Thank you all.
Hi, everyone.
Thanks all.